Hey everybody, welcome to my podcast. I'm Simca Fisher, and today I am absolutely delighted to announce that I have a special guest, my friend Destiny Herndon De Rosa. And I practiced your last name and I messed it up anyway.
Could you say your last name for us, Destiny?
I have to say, I had such a good time telling my kids. They're like, Mama, can we go to the beach? I'm like, no, I have an interview with Destiny today. I'm sure you have only heard that 10,000 times in the past, so... Thank you so much for coming on my show, Destiny.
I was a cocktail waitress at one point in my life. So every single time I would bring anyone a beer, they would say, oh, is it my destiny to have you? And I'm like, yes.
Yes.
You and the other 50 people that yes. I'm serving. Right
now. As long exactly. as you give me a tip, it is my destiny, right?
Exactly.
Well, I apologize. Just add me to the list, I guess. Destiny, I have the idea to interview. You were on my list of people that I've been wanting to interview, but the other day I had written something about Charlie Gard, the poor little baby who's going through all this extreme medical care, and there's a tussle in the courts, and the pro-lifers are not behaving well, in my opinion. So I wrote a thing just clarifying about what the actual stance of the Catholic Church is on what kind of medical care we're required to give to children. And I got a lot of blowback about it from pro-lifers. And you called me up to make sure I was okay. And I thought that was like the most feminist pro-life thing that anyone has done for me all year. You just called me up to make sure I was okay. And I thought, and then you said yes to an interview also. So I really appreciate that. And I thought that would be a good way to introduce you to people who might not be familiar with you. Because you're a pro-life leader. You're a feminist. You're a big name. You've been on TV. You were in The Atlantic. You were in New York Times. You were on Fox. You were everywhere. But you obviously don't think that you're, too big to check in on people. So
beyond that, it's, I am used to having unpopular opinions that get blowback. So I know that feeling of just watching people, talk about you and not talk to you.
Right.
And so having all these people discuss your opinions, I admire so much how bold you are. And you are saying, what you believe to be true and right. And in my opinion, you gave a great voice to those of us who have been watching that case and kind of, even just when they, hey, we don't all know everything, it's in this day and age with the internet and everything else, everyone's an expert. Everyone has an opinion right. about things that are so far out of most of our, wheelhouse that, and they're so adamant about it. So right. anytime I see someone who's just being pummeled for having a bold opinion or offering, a different perspective, it's always nice. I always welcome others into this realm of unpopular.
Yes, it's a wonderful. Well, that's actually one of the questions I had for you. I want to talk about your group, about New Wave Feminists a little bit. But first, let me just ask you, the last time you were sort of all over the place on the internet was when you you went to the Women's March. You registered as one of the, you were one of the partners. We were a sponsor. And then mm-hmm. people found out, wait a minute, why are these pro-lifers in the Women's March? That's not very woman. And you got uninvited, and then you went anyway, and then you went to the March for Life, and like everybody was mad at you, as I recall. So
yeah, that's that thing where it's like, you're doing it right. If absolutely everyone's furious with you all
right,
the time.
Right.
But the main thing about the Women's March is we applied. It was no secret whatsoever that we're pro-life. It's plastered all over all of our social media. And in order to become a sponsor, we had to submit, our Instagram and Twitter and Facebook and bio of ourselves. And so the bio began, while we are anti-abortion, here are the list of things that we have common ground on. And, we are concerned about a Trump administration. The misogyny that we've seen in his past right. has no place in an administration here in America that needs to be respectful to women and children and minorities. Minorities and everything else. And so we wanted to go and march to hold him accountable as well.
Yeah.
And they welcomed us with open arms. And I think we were on their website listed as a sponsor for like 4 days. And then that's when an article by The Atlantic came out kind of, I would say giving them some credit for being as diverse and inclusive as they claim to be by saying, look, they're even including pro-lifers.
Oh,
and then that's when the Twitter sphere totally blew up and was like they're doing what? Oh no, they're not. So then we were removed. But the funny thing is, we're going anyway. Like, feminism is a movement that's based in rebellion. So I don't need an invitation to like come do anything. If I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. So made no difference to us.
Well, that really struck me. I was watching an interview that you gave on Fox News, and you were very polished. You had a lot of really good, snappy, punchy answers. And then this was right before the march, and they said, "Well, are you going anyway?" And you're like, "Of course I'm going." it was a raw moment, as they say. So
it became 10 times more punk rock that we weren't uninvited, but we were removed as a sponsor. And the really cool thing that happened through that is it started this national conversation of who's allowed to sit at the feminist table, right? Like, you know, who's allowed to be in our club. And the thing that I found incredibly fascinating is how many women, very adamantly pro-choice feminist women, were saying, "This is ridiculous. Like, you can have different opinions than us when it comes to this issue." And the thing is, I think my group was the perfect group to be a part of a march like this, because we see two people. And that's what I always try to tell people when they say that pro-life feminism is an oxymoron. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of pro-life people focus on the unborn child, which I totally get. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of feminist groups focus on the woman and completely disregard the unborn child. New Wave Feminist sees two people. We mm-hmm. want to support and protect the woman and the unborn child. And so this is not something about, you know, we don't even really focus on laws or anything like that. We want to change the culture. We don't want a woman to ever feel like she has to have an abortion because she has no other choice, because she doesn't have support or resources. And most people, even my very most pro-choice friends, agree with that, because a woman, it's not pro-choice when a woman feels like she has no other choice but to choose abortion.
Right. And that's something that I hear over and over again. There's a woman who feels like she, based on her circumstances and based on the people that are surrounding her and what people are expecting of her, she doesn't really feel like there is any other choice. So, okay, so let me just back up a little bit, in case there's some misfortunate soul out there who's not familiar with you and not familiar with the work that you do. You're the founder of New Wave Feminists. How long have you been around as a group?
We've been around for over a decade. We just finally became a 501c3 last year. I've done my best. I want to keep this a very pure vision, and we try to kind of keep money out of it. There's no salaries, no fancy office, no staff, nothing like that. Uh-huh. Because I do want to continue to be challenging the norms in both the feminist realm and the pro-life realm. So that's not very conducive to again, donors and things like that. But, we actually became a 501c3 because we were afraid we could end up getting sued at some point. We were making a lot of kind of videos poking Planned Parenthood in the eye and things like that, just pointing out a lot of the inconsistencies when you have an abortion provider that claims that they're for women, but really they're kind of profiting off of one of the most difficult choices most women ever have to make. Mm-hmm. And so we were doing a lot of that, and someone said, "Okay, they could definitely sue you for some of this. So you'll need to be careful." Yeah. So we became a 501c3 and felt like complete sellouts. But in the long run, it's good. It made us much more
official.
That's
a pretty low bar for selling out, I have to say. You're off of Facebook and you're become a charitable organization.
Well, this is, yeah. When I have to get letterhead with our name on it, it feels, again, a little less punk rock. So that's why it was so good that they kicked us out of the women's march and we got some of our street cred.
Well, let me ask you about this. I mean, you're talking about how you fit in or how you don't fit in with people who consider themselves feminists. Now, I know that your organization is not, you're not a religious organization. But,
correct.
But you are yourself Catholic, correct?
No. Oh, my goodness. Am I allowed to be on your show still? No, I'm not.
Why
Catholic.
Did I think that? Maybe I just like you.
I know. You just want me to be. No, I'm not. I was raised Protestant.
I don't even know why I thought that. I didn't do my homework. I'm sorry.
No. My pro-life beliefs really are founded very much in science and just the fact that this is a unique genetic creation that deserves to be protected. And, you know, it's something to me that almost makes it even more, I guess, significant, right? This is a human being that, for all we know, is taken billions of years to compose the atoms that have made this one person. And then, you know, we're just going to terminate them because it's not convenient right now. Right. And for me, that's something where that life is absolutely valuable. The woman's life is valuable. Like, we need to be protecting it at all costs. But, you know, there's a lot of amazing, wonderful organizations that we work with, obviously, that are religious. But yeah. New Wave Feminist has kind of become a catch-all for some of the alternative religions. You know, we've got Muslims and Buddhists, plenty of Catholics. You know, it's a big group of a lot of different people with a lot of different religious beliefs, but who all believe in, again, supporting women and protecting the life of the unborn.
Well, let me ask you then, seeing as you do have so many different people working together and, you know, doing a really good impression of a Catholic, whether intentionally or not, and I mean that as one of the highest compliments ever. No, but seriously, I mean, you have a very wide umbrella, and yet the word feminist is still, you know, very much in dispute. A lot of people do say that it means abortion and promiscuity and man-hating and, you know, cats and dogs living together, basically. I mean, there are a lot of people who are just kind of a lot. You do work in the pro-life movement. There are a lot of conservatives anyway, and a lot of them are kind of allergic to the word feminist. So is it ever a liability to call yourself a feminist?
You know, I'm sure it is. I'm sure there's a lot of people who quit listening to us the second they hear the word pro-life, or quit listening to us the second they hear the word feminist, or start listening because they're like, hold on, how does that work? Kind of at the crux of it for me, if you look at the history of feminism, women were treated as property for a huge chunk of history. And now that we have gained some liberation in our rights, we have passed that oppression down to the unborn child. Now we treat the unborn person as our property. And why? It's because, you know, we're bigger and stronger. It's the epitome of might makes right thinking. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's exactly what a patriarchal system had done to women. Uh-huh. And so for me, it makes complete sense that feminists, above all else, we should be the ones standing up for the vulnerable and the marginalized and the oppressed. And it doesn't get much more vulnerable than the child inside the womb.
Uh-huh. Well, I do know that you yourself, you became pregnant when you were 16 years old, and you talk about that as sort of the time when you, when being pro-life really, well, I mean, that's when it gets
serious. It had
serious.
To be more
that's
than a belief you, at that
right,
point.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, talking about, I mean, a 16-year-old pregnant girl is also an extremely vulnerable person. Can you tell us a little bit about just like what that pregnancy was like and why you made the choice that you did?
Yeah, and you know, I was raised in a pro-life family, and it's something where my mother actually became pregnant with me at 19 when she was at the University of Texas, had her full, you know, life ahead of her. She had moved away from her family, was up here in Dallas, and so she could have had an abortion. Nobody would have known about it. Right. You know, there would have been plenty of support for it and people saying that was the responsible thing for her to do, but she didn't. She knew as soon as, you know, the second line showed up on that pregnancy test that I was a human being, that the choice had already been made, and I existed now. And so that's why, to me, you know, she is my feminist hero. She's somebody who sacrificed, you know, the comfort of her own life. She ended up having to move back home with my grandparents, who are ordained ministers, and, you know, definitely not easy to tell them, hey, so I'm not a virgin, also I'm pregnant, and I'm single. And so I kind of watched her, you know, growing up. It was difficult. You know, there were times where she was, you know, working nonstop and had some relationships. Like, it was not easy to grow up as kind of the product of an unplanned pregnancy. At the same time, would I rather not be alive? Like, right, of course not. My life is beautiful, and I have wonderful people in it. And even through the hardships, like, we've been very, you know, hashtag blessed. So I think that there were many ways where I knew better than to repeat that cycle, though. Like, I knew how hard it was. Mm-hmm. So at 16 years old, when I became pregnant, and I think a lot of what led up to that was buying into this kind of, I call it the Cosmo mentality, right? That for this strong, liberated, independent woman, our power is our sexuality. Mm-hmm. And so it's not necessarily that, you know, I was having sex even because it felt good at 16. Like, it doesn't. Everybody's bad at it. Mm-hmm. You're doing it because this is something that you are told makes you a powerful woman.
Right, right.
And so, you know, when you buy into that lie and you start, you know, kind of living that lifestyle that early on, eventually you're probably going to end up pregnant. And so that's where kind of my pro-life focus has been, on the fact that, yeah, we talk about abortion, we talk about the teen pregnancy, but we're really not addressing the root issue, which is that teen girls and guys are growing up in such a sexually charged, pornified culture,
right,
that we're having, you know, more sex than we've ever had before, but it's low quality. It's basically just using other people. It's, you know, okay, here, I'll do something Catholic for you. My very favorite thing that Pope John Paul II, I believe, said, mm-hmm, was the problem with pornography is it's not that it shows too much, it's that it shows too little. And I think that's a brilliant, brilliant kind of assessment of the culture that we live in right now. You know, it's not that we're having too much sex, it's that we're really kind of having too little intimacy.
Uh-huh.
And so I end up pregnant because I'm living this lifestyle, and before I know it, I'm single as well, and raising this child with the help and support of my family. But I had many peers who became pregnant at that same time, and they did choose abortion. And so watching them and seeing what led them to that choice, you know, and I'm going to use air quotes when I say choice, because many of them, it was, they're going to get kicked out of their house. They right. are going to lose any type of support system they currently have, let alone, like, you know, what type of support system they would need to raise a child. And so just seeing how damaging it was to these women long term, and then realizing how, even though I was in a really scary situation, like as soon as I found out I was pregnant, I remember wanting to rip my stomach off of my body and run away from it. Like just this mm-hmm. visceral feeling of like, no, yeah. this cannot be happening. Like right. I know better than this. How is this happening to me? And how am I doing this to another human being now? Like another child's going to have to go through kind of the hardships that I probably went uh-huh. through. And having that feeling, even still, I realized that I was incredibly lucky because I did have a family that wasn't going to kick me out. I did have health care. You know, I did have a roof over my head
right.
and was able to even, you know, I was telling someone the other day, like I worked a summer job to save up for when the baby got there. There's so many women who don't even have those options. And that's where New Wave Feminist really wants to come in. And again, it's not just a matter of focusing on a woman only when she's pregnant. You know, we want to change the culture so that we address the issues that lead her to feeling like that's a lifestyle she wants to live in the first place, because yeah. a lot of it is self-exploitation, yeah. honestly.
Yeah.
And then also if she does face a crisis pregnancy, like how do we love her as well as the unborn child?
Mm-hmm. And how do you, I mean, listening to your story and listening to your mother's story, I'm wondering, you know, you saw to some extent what she went through, and obviously you knew that it was a less than ideal situation, but yet you did it. You went ahead and put yourself in for that as well. How do you right. talk to your kids? I mean, not to put you on the spot or anything like that, but my goodness.
It is. Yeah, I mean, it's really hard. And again, it had to come down to more than kind of this abstinence only, like, just don't have sex. It had to come to, do you understand the emotion? Like, let's unpack why it is that I felt like I needed to be that way in the first place. Uh-huh. So that's what I needed to find love. You know, a big part of what I have tried to provide for my children is just a stable home life. I married my husband when my son was 3 years old,
mm-hmm.
and we've had 3 other children since then. So we have 2 boys and 2 girls.
Uh-huh.
And I always tell people, like, that's why New Wave Feminist will never be this like man hating type of feminism. Cause I love men. I've created 2 men with my own body. Like that's yeah. women are amazing. Men are amazing.
Yeah.
But it's something that I have to look at it from both perspectives, you know, are there ways that my sons are going to, you know, try to exploit women, or, you know, we're kind of in a culture now because of this strive for equality that it wasn't ever, let's make men live up to the standard that I think a lot of women were at when it came to respect for sexuality, because at the end of the day, uh-huh. women are the ones who are going to get pregnant. It is going to happen to our body.
Right.
And instead it became this equality of let's all meet at the base level. Let's right. all be equally terrible. Let's right. all exploit everybody. How come men are the only ones who get to have porn addictions? Women should get to have porn yeah. addictions now too at a very young
right,
age.
Right,
like
right.
we have just bought into this lie that, that sex can be disconnected from the humanity of the other person and from the fact that this is a procreative act. This could create a new life. And all of these very like biological scientific things that, you know, I understand people want to say it's a moral issue, but really it's not. Our bodies, when we engage in something like that, we bond with that other human being, whether we want to or not. You know, our body doesn't care how liberated we are. Like, we are going to make those connections. You know, the neural pathways that are formed through pornography use or any of these other things, like, we see these biological outcomes that are coming from our choice to exploit other human beings and objectify other human beings. And so, kind of one of the things that I always try to explain to people, because when you enter into this world of feminism, there's pro-porn feminists, there's pro-sex work feminism, there's, you know, all of these things that in my mind are very contradictory to what we should be aiming for as women. And so I explain to people that I put a filter of human dignity on top of any issue. So if there's any new issue that comes up and someone says, how do you feel about this as a feminist? It's not just, well, would that empower that woman? Would she feel empowered by, you know, through sex work or doing porn or whatever it is? It's not really about that. It's about, does this respect her human dignity? Mm-hmm. Is this good for women as a whole? Does this build us up in any way? Because I do think that, you know, rather than settling for this piggish standard that we've allowed, you know, there's actually a hilarious meme that's I'm assuming poking fun at feminists, where it's this crazy looking feminist woman and it says, men and women are equal. Men are pigs. Women can be pigs too. Like, how about just nobody be pigs?
How about nobody be pigs?
Everybody be better than
all right, there's
that.
Your like, new t-shirt. Let me ask you.
That might actually be a great thing for the world.
It certainly would. And it's strangely enough, something that people don't actually think of on their own if they're surrounded by thinking that is what equality means. Let me ask you, do you think that there's anything, especially you say that you put a filter of humanity on and dignity on people, and that's how you judge, that's how you judge going forward in any particular issue. Is that a specifically feminine thing to do? Is that something that women are better at naturally than men are? I know that's kind of a weird question.
Well, yeah, of course, as a feminist, I have to say that everybody's equal, but we know that's not true. everybody is equal, but we're uniquely different. I talk to men and women all over the nation all the time, and I will say that, like, when it comes to the abortion debate, men argue from their heads all the time, which is probably the worst thing that most men could do in that situation, because women do talk more, you know, about the relational aspect. This is how it would impact me to lose access to abortion or healthcare or whatever the issue is. And you have men saying, well, you know, the stats on that are blah, 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 blah. And they end up maybe winning the argument, but losing the person. Uh-huh. And so kind of one of the things that I do think women are good at is we naturally are very relatable. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's, you know, men are excluded from that or can't necessarily learn that way. I think a lot of it's different personalities. One daughter who's much more logical than emotional, and I have one son who's much more emotional than logical. And so I do think it's just something where you kind of have to train yourself, to apply that human dignity filter and to talk to people as human beings. There's a group called Rehumanize International, and they have this concept they talk about that the word is sonder, and it means believing other people's lives are as complex and interesting as your own. Uh-huh. And I think a lot of times we don't think that, like, well, I'm the lead player in my story of my life. Like, I'm the one who's very interesting, not you. But when you actually realize, like, wow, these other people are struggling with the same complexities I am and the same, you know, desires and struggles and vices and whatever it is that I am, you really kind of start to look at things differently. Mm-hmm. And I think that, coupled with the fact that my group does believe in the consistent life ethic, which does have roots in Catholicism as well, but it's just this belief that, like, be a good person. Human beings should be free from violence for the duration of their life. Uh-huh. And so we're anti-abortion, we're anti-death penalty, we're anti-torture, we're anti-unjust war. We really just feel like you should be good. Be good. Be good to yourself. Be good to one another. And a lot of people believe in this. A lot of people are kind of, like, you know, hungry for that type of consistency in a group, which I think is why we had so much success back in January, honestly, because at the beginning we were getting a lot of coverage from conservative sites that wanted us to attack the Women's March and all that.
Right.
But the more that we talked about our consistent life ethic, the more that we actually started getting invited to places that normally you wouldn't see pro-life people talking. We were on Vice News. I did NPR. Yeah. We were interviewed by BBC. I mean, stuff like that. Because ultimately, I think we agree on so much more than we disagree on, but we've all kind of bought into this rhetoric that, oh, the nation's so divided and so polarized. I mean, maybe the 24-hour nonstop talking heads are, but
right.
most people, when you talk to people, we have so much in common.
Yeah. Now, is that something that you've had to change your view on? I mean, growing up in a Protestant, conservative, presumably conservative family, have your views on, well, for instance, being opposed to the death penalty or you know, a lot of social justice about expecting the government to provide a safety net for poor women so that they don't have to consider abortion, that kind of thing. These are less popular in conservative circles. Is this something that you've changed your mind on?
Yeah, I mean, well, death penalty, I've always been anti-death penalty. I think for me, war was kind of a hard one growing up in Texas and having military members in the family. It's not that I'm pro-war by any means, but I've always had the belief that, you know, we should have a strong military that we never have to use. And mm-hmm. so I actually found myself speaking at Texas A&M, which is a big, you know, military college down here. And I was going on this anti-war rant, and then I look out and realize like half the audience, they're cadets, and they're all wearing their dress blues. And I was like, know your audience, Destiny. That wasn't a good move. But I mean, they agree. Like, they don't want to ever have to kill anybody. They don't ever want to be in danger.
Right.
So, again, it's something where I do see a lot of common ground interest. As far as government assistance, I do think maybe that's where my opinion has had to change, because obviously here in Texas there are quite a few Republicans, and it's not that they want people like starving and dying right. on the streets or anything. They just feel like the best thing to do is to empower them. And I will say that at times I'm politically an independent. I have leaned libertarian uh-huh. just in the sense that I think the government is corrupt. Uh-huh. I think the government kind of messes up a lot of the stuff it touches. And so the more that we can free people from any type of dependence on the government, the better.
Uh-huh.
And the more that faith communities and just communities in general can step in and assist people and get them back on their feet and empower them to, you know, take care of themselves, I think that is a wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is when we say these safety nets should be gone, we mm-hmm. should remove them altogether. I think that's incredibly dangerous. And that's kind of what we've seen happen when it comes to talking about Medicaid benefits. For example, here in Texas, mm-hmm. if you are a pregnant woman, you get a proof of pregnancy and you take that into Medicaid and you have free health care then. And that's something vital when it comes to the pro-life cause. You know, we see right. pro-lifers who stand out on the sidewalks in front of these clinics and offer women options. And then, you know, if a woman actually takes you up on it, you take her to a pregnancy center. You get her the free pregnancy test so that you can verify that she is indeed pregnant. You get her a proof of pregnancy, and then she is able to access Medicaid.
Right.
So there's certain things that have evolved more because of my pro-life work than anything else,
right.
realizing that there's almost an element of hypocrisy. If you're out there, this is the way you're saving, you know, this child and helping this woman, but then you turn around and you vote for people who want to do away with these programs.
Uh-huh. So what then would you say makes a politician pro-life? I mean, a lot of people are calling themselves pro-lifers these days. What's kind of a baseline that you would expect from a politician to earn the title of pro-life?
You know, I really think that it has to be more of the whole life perspective, but I don't want to sound.
Oh, I think we lost Destiny for 1 second. Hold on, folks. I'm going to. Okay, sorry about that. We lost you for a second. You were talking about what qualifies a politician to earn the title of pro-life.
Yeah, and I don't want to sound cynical or jaded, that all of them are just doing it because they want to cash in on this huge base of voters.
Uh-huh.
But I do think the most dangerous thing that we ever did was make abortion a partisan issue, because it has allowed us to basically have the conservative party and these politicians, we spend all of our time making sure that they're pro-life enough, right?
Uh-huh.
Versus trying to change a culture. And in order to change a culture, you need every political party, every faith, you know, secular and everybody. You need everyone on board. And so we've kind of put all our eggs in one basket that this is going to be a conservative issue. At the same time, what I think you have happen is, could you imagine tomorrow if all Republicans, abortion became illegal, say, and the culture shifted and it was no longer an issue? Mm-hmm. I think a lot of Republicans would be terrified, because then people are going to start looking at, you know, there are other platforms that maybe they disagree with, and they would lose those votes. Yeah. So I think you actually have a lot of conservative politicians, unfortunately, who want to give you lip service and, you know, say they're pro-life, but they're not really doing anything to get rid of that, because they need the security of knowing that you are going to, if you disagree with every other platform, you're going to stick with them because you're pro-life.
Right.
I think that really de-incentivizes us getting pro-life Democrats or any other groups growing. But at the same time, for Democrats, it would be a huge win. Like, take away that one issue. Yeah. Let everybody be someone who believes in consistency. Because I think, at least what I've seen with my Catholic friends, is most of them apply this idea of nonviolence. And because abortion is that first act of violence, it's the thing that would happen very earliest, a lot of times that's what they feel like they have to vote with.
Right.
So then it ends up negating these other issues that, unfortunately, both parties are very inconsistent in their view of nonviolence. And we certainly saw that, I think, with Donald Trump. So you had asked, you know, how could someone convince me that they were pro-life? A lot of times when you hear these politicians talk about where that conviction comes from, you can tell if it's disingenuous. And he was a lifelong Democrat, pro-choice Democrat, and then, you know, it made more sense for him to run as a Republican, so all of a sudden his convictions change. And we hear him talk about the fact that he had a friend who, they were going to have an abortion. They didn't want to have this child, but then for some reason they decide that they're going to have it. And now that kid's a winner. Well, like, what if that kid was a loser?
Right, I know.
Was the worst. Like, that to me was not a convincing reason that it suddenly opened his eyes, you know? But again, we've created a system where politicians can just cash in on it by applying that label. They have this huge voter base that feels like, honestly, they have to vote for them because they have no other choice. I mean, I heard so many people this last election who would say, nobody wanted to vote for either of them.
Right.
But it became this lesser of two evils
thing. Where you had to plug your nose and vote for the one. Yeah, sure.
Right.
Yeah. So, I'm not going to ask you who you're going to vote for next time around, because maybe the world will come to an end and we won't have to vote for any of these clowns. But
we can hope.
There's a lot of people. A lot of people are looking around for some kind of alternative, so we don't find ourselves in this position again. There's the pro-life Democrats. There's third-party candidates. Where do you see? I know you're not really intensely political, but where do you see the most hope for the future?
You know, a lot of people have been sharing stuff about the American Solidarity Party with me, which I believe is it Catholic?
It's founded. It's based on the ideas of Chesterton, but I don't think it's necessarily. It certainly doesn't exclude non-Catholics. I think they're meant to be universal ideas. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot of consistency I see in that, but of course, it is very hard to. It's very hard to not be in the, Democratic or Republican. And I think that is where I became very scared to vote or to become an independent. Like, you feel like you're losing this powerhouse behind you, right? Like, once you leave this party, because now you no longer identify with anyone. But I found that the opposite was actually true. As soon as I became an independent and could, you know, get rid of the blind allegiance to one political party and get rid of this, like, having to make excuses for disgusting behavior just because you had an R or D behind your name, you know.
And it goes for both parties.
I'm now able to criticize everyone and say what you're doing is not okay. Like, I think that would be the coolest thing in the world if suddenly everybody became an independent and we actually started making people, you know, be good people in order to earn this role of authority in our society versus, as long as you've signed up with the group that I'm a part of, then we're just going to rubber stamp you through and view you as okay. So in the last election, like, I don't have any problem admitting it, but I voted for Evan McMullen because he was the closest, in my opinion, of somebody who was consistent and compassionate and very empathetic, and did seem to truly care. Like, it was a genuine belief with him.
Yeah. That's really interesting about feeling more empowered once you don't have the powerhouse behind you, because if you've got a giant group behind you, but they don't actually represent you, then what good is it?
But you get so brainwashed into it. And the thing that I thought was so interesting, you know, in the age of social media, anytime a big political story would happen, you know, the tapes were dropped of Donald Trump saying those vulgar things, or, you know, Hillary's emails or whatever, something would come out. I would watch my Facebook and I would see that. And I have a very diverse group of people. So, you know, the same article would be shared 10 times and 5 of them were like, this is garbage. And the other 5 were like, yes, this is gospel. Yes, like, this is what we need to be reading. And so the more that I started noticing patterns, though, was people would use these turns of phrase that were very similar. And I realized, oh, it's because they won't comment on something when it happens. They will watch, you know, either Fox or CNN or MSNBC, whatever, you know, their drug of choice is. They'll pick that one. They'll take it in, and then they will regurgitate what the talking heads have told them.
Right.
And so you actually don't have a lot of critical thinking. And when you would take just any issue and it might come up and you would be talking to someone and they had to form their own thought on it, you saw a lot of struggle. You saw a lot of defensiveness.
Yes.
And so I think we have all gotten very lazy when it comes to that type of thing. Like, we've got 20 articles that'll tell us how to believe on any one issue. And if we don't like what the article says, we just go down to the comm box and we can find someone, you know, saying the brilliant thing against it. And then we can, you know, that's how I feel about that thing.
Right. Wow, so that's a bigger problem.
It makes it very easy to put people in two groups.
Oh my goodness, I can't believe this time has gone by so quickly. We're actually running a tiny bit over the length that I meant to go. It's gone by so quickly. I can't let you go before I ask you one last thing, though, Destiny. A friend of mine wanted to know if you were still using the phrase fartners in rhyme. Is that something that you want to talk about?
I think that's an amazing phrase. I don't know if I was ever using it, but if I wasn't, I'm using it now.
Oh, you're using it. Definitely. Oh, I thought there was a juicy story there, with no pun intended.
Oh, that
was,
don't use the word juicy. That's
I'm so sorry. I have sons as well, so these things just happen.
I agree. I'm definitely a huge fan of toilet humor. But yes, sorry for talking your ear off.
No, I'm delighted. I'm absolutely delighted. Where can people go if they want to find out more about the work that you do?
I'd say the best place to find us is on our Facebook page, but we also have New Wave Feminists, plural with S at the end, newwavefeminists.com. That links to all of our social media.
Okay, excellent. So that's a good place to start. And Destiny, you are endlessly entertaining. You always have something interesting and unexpected to say or do. And your hair has been purple for a while, but I'm keeping a close eye on it to see if that shifts.
Changes
well.
With my mood.
That's awesome. Destiny, thank you so much, and thank you for the work that you do. I'm so glad that you're here on this earth doing what you do.
Right back at you.
All right, thanks.